Welcome to the round one. I guess actually when we record, we normally say pre-round two. So the round two, Supercoach Coach Podcast. I'm Marcus and I'm joined this week by two of our long-running guests on the show, featured on Ep 5 of our preseason podcast. If you are a new joiner to us, and if you're on YouTube, repping some cool gear is one of our guests. Dunny, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Marcus.
And we've got Faz as well. Welcome back, Faz. We're normally side by side when we do these, but you are fresh from the internet at the moment.
That's right, coming live from the interwebs. Good to be here, lads.
Awesome. So, look, as a community, I think cheery spirits this week after a good round one. We haven't had a showing like that in Supercoach round one for a little while. Faz is probably the one that's doing it the toughest at the moment. Long time to turn things around and structurally, hopefully, not too many problems across the board. But I think overall as a community, we over-indexed on Rookie Ruck 2, which worked out pretty well. We were probably not as keen on spending all that money on Neil, Lloyd and Gorn, and they all scored pretty poorly in the first round. So a bit to be excited about for this first episode back. And how are you gents feeling about your first week of Supercoach?
Yeah, look, not too bad. I didn't go with the Rookie Rucks. I stuck with the Gorn Grundy, so a little bit of pain there, but I'm hoping that it pays off in the long run. I did have Flynn on the bench at least, so I've got him for the cash generation. Would have been nice if I had that 140 on field, but that's okay. We'll take the money and run. For me, the only real downside was starting with Matt Rowe. Obviously, that was a bit disappointing. He was looking all right in the first 10 minutes that I was watching him, and obviously that knee went down, so he's my biggest issue this week. But it was nice to nail a heap of the rookies for a change and get all the good ones in, like Rowe, like Flynn, like James Jordan, Errol Goulden. So it was really good to crack some of those. And hopefully on my way to getting heaps of cash in the bank to do some upgrades soon. How about yourself, Faz?
Yeah, as Marcus mentioned, I think I was doing the most whinging over the weekend in the group chat. I did go with the Rookie Ruck. So Flynn at R2, Grundy was my R1 and unfortunately was my captain as well. So I wasn't too impressed with that. And as you mentioned, Marcus, I think the community view was to lean away from the more expensive guys. I think I found all that extra cash I got by taking Gorn out of my side. And so I straight away put that to getting Lloyd back in the side and Neil back in the side. So not ideal with their subpar scores on the weekend. Dangerfield as well over Dusty. So there's a few issues there, but at least as far as Lloyd and Neil are concerned, I think they should turn it around and end up being good picks. Hopefully the teams that started without them don't get them for too much of a discount. Score wasn't the best on the weekend, largely due to rookie on-field errors. I think I've got most of the good rookies. James Jordan is the only one I think that I've missed from the ones that Dunny mentioned before. But got Goulden, got Rowe, both on my bench, unfortunately, but that'll be changing this week. Structurally, the team's looking all right. Got to fix the Dangerfield issue. Managed to avoid Rowe this week. I'd be very interested to hear what your opinions are as to where we go with Danger. And given that Danger's the mid-forward, there'll be a fair bit of crossover as well with our discussions about Matt Rowell as well, because I could always take a bit of cash in bank and save that for potentially some correction trades before round three.
What'd you actually score and rank, Faz?
I thought I could get away with not having to mention that. So it was 1981 for me. That's the score, not the rank, unfortunately. Rank is a lot higher. That's 28,000 right now. But as we know, at the start of the season, 100 points does a lot difference to your ranking. I'm not going to throw in the towel just yet with the team. A few better rookie decisions in terms of Goulden and Rowe on field, I think that rank could be looking a lot healthier.
How about yourself, Tony?
I was 2058, and that put me at about 11,300. And as Faz said, I'm not real worried about that at the moment. The key for me was just to nail the right rookies and get that cash coming in. Yeah, you mentioned a couple of those guys. I didn't start with Neil. I didn't start with Lloyd, but I did go with the two expensive rucks. But I did thankfully make one good decision, and that was starting Dusty over Danger. So pretty happy about that one.
Yeah, I don't think any of us have hit by both of those candidates, Raoul and Danger, so that's at least the positive. That would be more of a headache this week otherwise. I scored 21-22, which was all right, considering I had Golden on the bench and had James Rowe on the bench. I think I got a question come in via Twitter when we were asking for questions, and Mark, tongue-in-cheek, asks who the highest-ranked podcast host was, and naturally he'd only ask that because he's beating all of us at the moment.
I think we can skip that one, yeah.
He traded in a non-playing rookie to pip my score, so he's flubbed himself anyway. But it was Dom Tyson, who we might have to correct anyway. It's a bit of a pain. I am ranked in the top 4,000, which I'm pretty happy about. I haven't started this well in a little bit of time, and had probably Mills being the main thing that I was most happy about. I think he was in under 3% of teams. And Mark and I both locked him away for the Patreon show, and that was one of our easier pick defenders. So pretty happy about that one. Hopefully a few others in the Supercoach community got on board. 154 with a couple of goals and 28 disposals was pretty neat. Don't want to count the eggs too quickly, but it's a good start for a relatively POD selection. And Walsh was in under 10% of teams. He was all right with 122, so that was good as well. I have Dangerfield, though, so I have to figure out what to do with him. Probably wish I had Dunkley instead now, but hindsight is a beautiful thing. Paid a fair bit for expensive players on fields. Orazio was probably the late move instead of playing a rookie on field or taking a Hayden Young type or taking a premium defender. So that wasn't too bad with 4 goals and 94 points. So a few things to be pretty happy about. But I ended up, weirdly enough, after talking it down most of the preseason, bringing in Lloyd and Neil, which I think is probably FOMO from previous years. But also I couldn't quite figure out how to spend some of that cash as well. So I went with the rolled gold. And a little bit concerned if they're not going to deliver for me because of the year I finally bloody pay. And if they score in the hundreds, I'm going to be pretty upset. But you can't complain with a start like that. And overall, I think pretty exciting from a community standpoint in terms of the leagues as well. So I think there's a Patreon League at 5th, the Gold League, the 50K Patreon League at 12th, Patreon Pods at 13th, SCC Dunny, 14th league overall. There's a heap of leagues, especially our Patreon leagues, who are killing it at the moment. So hopefully reflective of some good advice and a decent starting team. I think we recommended Tom Mitchell in that show as well. We had No Lloyd. We had the rookie R2. I think it was actually reasonably aggressive as a more unique team. So I'm happy that hopefully it seems to be paying dividends out there for all our Patreon subscribers. So if you're not yet subbed, this is a good time for me to plug patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you want bonus content. We'll obviously released a team picker if you're listening to this prior to the season launch, and that's what I'm referring to there. That's done pretty well. If you're looking to get on board, support the show, support the content, get your questions answered during a Patreon bonus, we'll be recording a bonus episode with Bryce later tonight. Jump on board. Last bit of update / housekeeping is to announce the current leader of our Patreon group. So on top of all the bonus content that you'll get for subscribing to us, you also have a chance in taking out the $200 group prize, our highest scoring Patreon after 22 rounds. And the current leader is Dom's team, Hound United. He's sitting 157th at the moment with a score of 22.67. So good start there from Dom, and hopefully you can keep it up, mate. That's a nice way to start the season with a big 2,200. All right, gents, we're going to get into some actual topics now, and why don't we start with Matty Rowe. Do either of you have an injury update on him? Any ideas what the prognosis might be after a day, or are we still waiting?
I did see an article a bit earlier where they said Stewie Jew reckoned that it wasn't going to be season ending, but it was at least going to be a reasonable amount of time. Don't know, you know, if he's had any updates since then. I don't think they'd had the scans at that point, but I would suspect that he's going to be out for, you know, a few weeks at least. But even if it's going to be 2 or 3 weeks, we definitely need to trade. And even if you don't, you might want to think about trading him because he's obviously going to drop in price fairly significantly when he plays his next game anyway, even if, you know, if you hold him for 2 weeks and he's back. I think there's no choice but to trade him out, and this is the week to do it before everyone else's prices change.
That's a good call, Dunny, and I agree with that. Even without knowing the prognosis, assuming it's longer than two, it seems like a must trade. One of the players that I have on the mind, Dunny, because a lot of us wanted to start with him, but we couldn't because he got suspended in the end. Zach Williams, what do you reckon about him as a trade-in target?
Yes. Currently sitting in my side, having replaced Matt Rowell already as soon as the game opened. So, look, I think it's a good call. A lot of us started with both Laird and Clark in the back line, both of whom have got mid-defender eligibility. So, for me, I've swung Clark into the midfield, put Williams into defence, and that also then opens up that Laird to the midfield if we need to do it at some point, swap as well. So I think it's really handy to be able to open up that swing, and you're bringing in a guy who most of us were going to start, and at 458K, you're making money going down from Matt Rowell as well. So for me, it's a bit of a no-brainer.
Don't mind it at all. I think, yeah, he presents a lot of value. There was a reason why he was one of the first talked about players over the preseason, and I think all three of us and probably a lot of the Supercoach community would have been starting him round one, but for that unfortunate 1 week suspension that he picked up in the preseason. So not much has really changed there. Obviously, he was a much harder player to pick and pretty much everyone went away from him. But in terms of the reasons that we wanted to pick him in the preseason, those are all still there. They're all the same. The only point that I bring up, I'm not sure if I would be swayed by this factor, but it was something that Bryce mentioned earlier today just in our discussions. He was saying maybe you don't want to go Zach Williams just because of the number of good backline options that we have this year. We saw it in the preseason. It seems to have carried over a bit into round one scoring at least. I've just had a look here at the defender scores. Marcus, you mentioned Callum Mills, who's in your side, had an absolute ripper. Jordan Ridley looks like he's playing another lucrative scoring role with all those intercept marks at Essendon. And then there's obviously all of the players that a lot of us picked with Laird, Lloyd, you've got Caleb Daniel, Tom Stewart. They all looked quite good again on the weekend. So there'd just be the question of whether there's room for Williams in your backline. I'd probably say, though, you just got to take the value when it's there. And if you can pick up Williams, he's priced at 458. So that's really cheap. It's almost 100,000 less than a lot of those backline options that we've started with. I think that inevitably somebody will pick up an injury. There'll be a reason that you've got to trade somebody in your backline. So I probably wouldn't be worrying too much at this point about not having the exact top six defenders and just pick up the value where you can get it.
One of the big reasons to bring in Williams, I guess, is just the price point. So if you have cash in bank, I think it certainly opens up a few more of the Caleb Daniel and whatever types. But if you are looking to trade this week and trade this week before the bubble situation next week to either keep options up your sleeve or whatever the case may be, then you're probably not going to double trade this week and double trade next week. It's four correction trades, probably too far. So if you're only doing one this week, then you're just stuck a little bit more with who you can pick up in the 1 week. There's probably not a big deal to wait another week to double trade next week and deal with the rail problem next week. You are giving up 1 week of potentially premium scores, so it's something to think about. If you're stuck for options, I think probably the only other guy who's cheaper, who offers value, who scored well on the weekends is maybe a Hunter Clark. If there's somebody really obvious that you missed that you want to pick up, so Zeeble on the halfback obviously scored well. If you had a mid forward that you could pivot into your midfield and trade to Jack Zeeble, you might consider moving to a value selection this week from Raul without trying to pick a premium replacement. But if you wanted to pick a premium replacement and you didn't have a lot of cash, I definitely think that he certainly stands out, doesn't he, Zach Williams? Also as a POD, potentially being able to bring him in. But otherwise, anybody else that you might look to, Dunny, in any other position, really? There's a bit of flexibility with some DPP for the first week, and your structure doesn't have to set until next week when you're going to do some correction trades anyway. Anybody else you might consider?
Andy McGrath, 510K, so he's a little bit more than what Rowell was. If you've got a little bit of cash left over, it scored a nice 133 on the weekend. He'd be one to look at. And as you mentioned, there's so much flexibility. You could swing to the forward line as well and pick up some of them.
Yeah, I like the McGrath suggestion, Dunny. At 5'10", he certainly looking like a potential breakout. We've talked about Tim Taranto a little bit. He only scored 107, which I guess is okay without being amazing, but still at 453,000, I think. If you didn't end up picking him up, he's a pretty decent value. And if you're looking for a mid-forward, I think there tends to be a bit of flexibility with the mid-forwards. And I guess with a lot of people with Laird, the back line is certainly an option too. So Jaden Short, about the 5'10 mark, not too bad either. And then you've got Dane Zorko, 525. He scored 114, playing a bit more midfield with Rayner being out. He's probably another one that if you have up to 25K more, I think that opens up quite a few sort of roll gold premium options without too many dramas. I'd probably go Zorko and Short ahead of McGrath at this stage, just because positionally they look like potential top targets, whereas McGrath has certainly shown a bit at the start, but he'd need to carry on with it, I suppose. Faz, any other thoughts in terms of rail replacements?
The other one that I'd throw in there is potentially Zach Butters, who's a guy that I started the season with up in my forward line. He's at 471, so below that row threshold. I think he had a bit of time in the midfield and just a player that I think will continue to get better across the season. Taranto is one that I quite like, 107 on the weekend. But yeah, I think some of the other options that were mentioned, particularly in the back line, it seems like that's where the best value is, Jaden Short or Zach Williams. If you've got that link, which I think you know, most teams have Laird in there, so I think that a lot of teams will have the option to do that. That's probably the direction I'd be going.
Can you get your thoughts on Butters, Dunny? Just because I didn't watch the game that much and FanFooty had him listed up forward. Where did he play?
He played a fair bit of everywhere, to be honest. I didn't watch it live. I did watch replay. You know, hadn't watched that second quarter where they played really well. I was out, so I wasn't able to watch it live, unfortunately. But yeah, he did play a fair bit across the half forward, but I did see him in the middle as well. I think that's going to be his role. I think you and I have had some chats about this across the preseason, Marcus, where I think it is a very flexible midfield group. You've got a lot of guys who can actually run through there. He'll certainly get his time, but in this particular game, they were just running wherever they felt like it looked like. I'll be keen to see where he actually plays against the Bombers this week. And I think that'll give us a bit better picture.
Let's move on quickly to Paddy Dangerfield.
So it might be good to get an unbiased view on how many weeks you think he'll get, Dunny. I'd be pegging it at 3 to 4.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think if it was going to be 2 weeks, it wouldn't have gone to the tribunal. I think it would have been the match review making that call. I think it's probably going to be 3, possibly 4. It was late, it was high, it was deliberate, and the consequences were pretty bad. He had to go off and he had a concussion. You could see fire in his eyes because he'd just been run down. He wasn't happy about it and he was going to take someone out. It didn't matter who it was. I think 3 to 4 is probably what he's going to be looking at.
I think anything beyond 2 weeks is almost certainly a trade. And even at this stage, because you're not really having any other competing priorities, probably tempted in a lot of instances to trade anyway this week. Just don't really see us getting through this week with the majority of us with Patrick Dangerfield still on the team. I saw quite a few questions asking about whether or not it's worth trading him out and spending trades if we've got more than enough cover because we've started sort of all playing positions. Like James Rowe was on my bench this week. You know, just sit him in there for 3 weeks and use your trades to try and make sure we shore up cash generation. Still seems to be a bit of questions around cash generation for the season. Can you see yourself holding Dangerfield, Faz, if he's out for, what are your boundaries to hold on to him?
That seems like a risky approach to me. I think that those concerns that people have raised about cash generation probably stem from some of the rookie scores that we saw on the weekend. And while we had the great results with Errol Goulden and James Rowe, we also saw guys like Tyler Brockman pull out a 22, I think it was. Fullerton was, I think, high 30s. I guess if you've got Chad Warner, James Rowe up forward, then you could be playing your bench then could be Dangerfield and whoever your F8 is, whether that's a Fullerton type. I guess I'd just be concerned, though, the concerns we had in preseason for job security for a lot of these rookies won't necessarily go away just from one good game. You know, Miles Bergman at Port, I think he had a decent debut, but looks like Hamish Hartlett's on his way back this week. So there's quite a few that I think will not necessarily be dropped after the first game, but I'd just be worried that sometime in that patch before Dangerfield's back, you might then be dealing with a second donut, which would be particularly bad in the forward line. I guess that's my concern, is that now's really the time that you can make that trade for Dangerfield. And putting Rowell aside, you probably don't have other issues that you're contending with right now. If you wait a week and then there's a drop pre-round 3, then you start to think, is it time to pull the trigger on a rookie correction trade now, or perhaps another player, say it's Orazio, has another great game and people are thinking he's a must-get player, or LDU had a great start to the season. If there's another move that needs to be made somewhere, I think that if you don't trade Dangerfield this week, you start to price yourself into having to keep him for the full whatever it is, whatever amount of time he's going to be away for. And I think you probably, you know that going into it, because the idea is Danger will have a good season. He's someone that you want to have for the whole year. So the less weeks that he's missing for, the less you want to trade him. I can just see it presenting some more issues, though, even if things are looking relatively clear this week.
What do you reckon, Donny?
Yeah, look, I agree with what Faz is saying there. And the thing that I'd probably put out there to the viewers and the listeners is that we've seen rookies come out and score 100 on debut and have 70s, 80s on debut. And we're like, oh, great, we can trust these guys on our field. And then the next week they come out and score 20 or 30. It has happened year in and year out. And how many times have we traded in someone who's scored 100? We've gone early on them and then they've failed from there. Look, it's certainly a valid play to do that, but to me, it's just too much risk. Let's say he's out for 4 weeks. You've got $610,000 sitting on the bench for 4 weeks and you're trusting a 100K rookie. And the other thing I'd probably throw in there is clubs probably aren't going to let, you know, a James Rowe or an Errol Goulden run wild like they did on the weekend. They're going to think, hang on, these guys can actually play. We need to possibly put a little bit more time into them and see how they go. That's my feelings on it. I agree with Faz. I think he's a trade this week if it's going to be any more than two, which we are pretty confident that it's going to be.
I agree with what you're saying about the scoring and the injury risk. I think it's just more that we have 30 trades, so it's hard not to pull the trigger at this stage. Like, you take the risk that you have less injuries as the season goes on, and so you can fix a problem when you have 30 trades. Why not? But at the same time, I guess I'm slightly encouraged by the fact that at the end of the day, it still felt like we had more rookies come through and available playing round one than we initially thought. I think two of the top eight scorers ended up being rookies, which was quite nice. So I'm less concerned about long-term cash generation. I don't necessarily hate. If you believe that Paddy is going to average 115, 120 for the rest of the season if he comes back, then there's nothing really too bad about sacrificing points on field for a few weeks in that pursuit. Again, I think it's just more we have 30 trades right now, so who's going to be doing that? I'm very likely to trade him, and I'm a Geelong supporter. I guess the way I'm trying to look at it is, how can you use this trade to structure up for better value? And that way, it's not just trading Dangerfield out. It's also improving your side or finding value that you missed out on for the long term. So that's where a Zach Williams, or if you didn't have a Zeebel type, there's structural moves that you can make to shore up your team that would push me to potentially take those moves a little bit more. So Faz has got to drop off pretty soon. Faz, why don't you finish off with trade advice for Patrick Dangerfield?
Yeah, sure thing, mate. And Bailey Scott's a name that always springs to mind for me when it comes to round one rookie sensations, who then went on to let us down to no end following their round one stellar debut. The player that I'll be looking at most closely for my Dangerfield trade is Callum Mills. I didn't listen to the great advice of Marcus and Mark in the preseason, and he was, as mentioned, was a lock in the Patreon team picker. I think I'd been burnt too many times in the past with Cal Mills and was letting previous season's results dictate my thinking. After seeing his stellar performance first go up in the midfield this week with 154, I'm not expecting those sort of scores every week, of course, but still a very unique pick. Only in, I think it's 3.9% of teams is what Supercoach is showing now, but that might be including some trades that have already been made. So Cal Mills will be the guy that I'm looking at most closely. A couple of other names that I'll just throw in there. Tom Mitchell, just about 2,000 less than Dangerfield, so you could bring him in. Looked fantastic, particularly in the second half against Essendon, and didn't seem to be, you know, showing any ill effects from his limited preseason. He was ready to go right off the bat. So I think Tom Mitchell's a good option there. Whereas if you want to stay in the forward line, I think that the guys I'd be looking at most closely, they're no real surprises in 56.4% of teams is Dustin Martin and 39.7% of teams, Josh Dunkley. Dusty looked fantastic. And I think it was the point that we all missed in the preseason was no off-season trips to Vegas for Dusty. I think he's one of those guys that whatever he's doing, he does it 100%. And it seems this year it was training the house down and he just looked pretty sensational on Thursday night. There were times when he just ran straight into a Carlton guy who had him dead to rights in a tackle. It didn't matter because Dusty just did his usual thing, pushed the guy off and was still very effective with the ball. If that's the sort of form that he's in, I don't know. It's not the first time he's had a stellar round one, but I think just with that better preseason, Dusty's could be in for a big one. So if I wasn't going Cal Mills, Dustin Martin would be the next player I'd be after. And just a final one for me, if you want to go a bit more unique, Sam Walsh also looked great on Thursday night, just covers the ground really well. So I think if this is the style of footy that we're going to see this year with, you know, more just time to run in open footy and less contested stuff, while Sam Walsh is really good in contests, he's also just great at covering the ground and seems to have moved into a full midfield, less time in the wing this year. So I can see some more good scores. And so at 543,000, he still presents a bit of value, but it's going to be Cal Mills for me. And watching Plummer back to earth now that I've said that.
That's just all music to my ears. Mills, check. Walsh, check. Thanks, Faz. Thanks for the pick-me-up before you go, and thanks for joining us for this first show back. I think you outperformed the rest of us in 2020, so hopefully you can continue the charge upwards. So best of luck for the week, mate.
Thanks, mate. Good to see you too, Dunny. I'll talk to you guys soon. See ya.
See you, Faz.
And then there were two. Why don't we continue with Dangerfield replacements, Dunny? Where would you go?
I liked what Faz was saying. I actually started with Dusty, which was one of my rare good moves. So I think he's a great option, as I like the Dunkley option. The other one probably to look at is Zorko. I think it's a bit of a like-for-like in the fact that it's another mid-forward that you can use if you need to swing him into the midfield. At 525K, you're making a fair amount of cash from Danger. And the other one that I don't think, you know, we really talked about much so far, if you really want to save some cash and go for more value, you could always look down to Isaac Heaney. He came out with 115. You know, Mills overshadowed him a bit from a Supercoach perspective, but I didn't mind his game either on the weekend in the wet. He's playing Adelaide this week, and when he played Adelaide last year in round one, I think he kicked four or five goals against them up forward. I did see a report today saying Buddy's back. So if Buddy's back, does that mean Heaney gets kicked out of the forward line and just lives in the midfield? It could be a bit of a unique option if someone wants to head down that way, although he's in about 10% of teams at the moment. What do you think of Heaney, Marcus?
I think just because there's a top four that's pretty well defined, I think it reduces my propensity to just take a breakout risk. I still think Heaney's a risk in terms of consistent midfield time over the course of the year. I think they still they like him up forward and what he provides there. So even if he pinch hits, like Mills has been struggling to get that midfield time, I think it's finally his. But I don't know how much they are intent on allowing Heaney a bit more time in the midfield now, the forward line, just the way they're structured up. And I guess with Zorko, Dunkley, Dangerfield, Martin, that only leaves two spots left to fill. So I wonder whether or not you need to take that risk, considering Rowan Marshall will probably be back and occupy that fifth spot. Only really leaves one spot left. And that's probably my only hesitation in the year where the options aren't as plentiful. Probably be a bit more keen on Heaney. But I don't think it's a bad pick. I just think that Sydney in a win, I still don't see them being a top eight team, even though they snuck a victory over Brisbane, who arguably, like Geelong, were probably caught napping a little bit against sides that were deemed the Dogs. So I just wonder, Heaney in a forward line across a few more losses, whether or not that starts to work against him. But 95 is probably still the basement for Heaney, and his upside's still probably 110. So I don't hate the selection. I just think you probably need to feel strongly about him to take the risk. I like the play that you mentioned before, Tom Mitchell, Dunny. I think Mitchell at 610K is basically the same price as Paddy. He'd probably be one of my top options, probably even ahead of Mills. Like, I know we get excited about Mills because we started him, but there is still some risk there. He's 545,000. Yeah. The rest of the backline options look really good. So I don't know if I'd aggressively trade into him, like Faz is maybe suggesting, although that may be easy to say because I now have him and I'm looking at the potential downside. But Tom Mitchell, similar to the Sam Walsh pick, I think the worry with Mitchell was that he was returning at not 100%. But after scoring 135 on his return game, racking up 39 disposals, the fluid nature of AFL this year with the changes in the rules seemed to really suit players that can just cover the ground a little bit more. And it's why I didn't end up with players, even Christian Petrarca, whose fitness potential was a bit more of a knock on him, even though I was really excited about Petrarca as a potential selection and continuing his good form. Mitchell is one of the best movers across the ground, and I think that if it's a year about racking up stats because you can keep going, then Tom Mitchell, certainly one that I'm looking pretty closely at for this week. Keen to ask you about Travis Boak, Dunny, because he doesn't follow the traditional profile of a midfielder that kills it early and then struggles to hang on to their elite scoring potential. He's just continued to build across his career, but Port is certainly looking like a top two, top four side. Boke is their number one midfielder by a fair mile. His ability to cover the ground and work hard seems pretty undeniable. He's a real smoky. Not many people pick him as a midfield premium, but he's the top scorer from round one, Dunny.
Exactly, yeah. He just continues to keep going. And there was actually a story in the Adelaide media here on him last week. And he does put in a lot of time in the gym. He looks after his body pretty well. He knows he's obviously getting older. He does a lot of the Pilates and the gym work and the running. And from that perspective, he's got a pretty good tank on him. He knows how to find the footy. He's not going to score 160 every week, but I think he's probably good for a 90-plus score most weeks.
I think probably for me, yeah, it'd be Mitchell or Dusty, number one. Though it's pretty hard to split the two. Mitchell probably has higher upside for the season, but Dusty in the role probably looks like a guy you don't want to miss out on. So tough to split between the two. And then option B in the midfield, Boak. Option B in the forward line, Dunkley. Option C in the forward line, Zorko. All right, last question for you, Dunny. Rookie R2, which you don't have. Any consideration to an early downgrade or early structural fix to bring on a second rookie ruck? Or is that something you'd wait on?
I would probably wait on it. I think last year, I know last year was a very weird one, of course. We all started with Naismith at R2. Yes, he got injured. Everyone said, oh, look, Gawn had a shocker in round one. We've done the right thing. And then I think in round two, albeit 8 weeks later, Gawn came out and smashed it in round two and went on from there. So, look, for me, I would want to see at least another game out of those rookie R2s before I changed my structure from the Gawn-Grundy combination. I don't think it's worth making that change. We talked about it earlier when we're talking about replacements up forward, where we said, you know, we had Rowe sitting there, and would we trust him to get another 100 next week? We probably wouldn't. Is Flynn going to get 140 again next week? Probably not. And there was actually some talk today that his ankle flared up a bit in that game as well. There is a chance that he may even miss, but who knows? We'll wait and see what happens with that. But no, I don't think it's time to make those structural changes yet. I think we traditionally say don't trade round one unless you get a long-term injury or a long-term suspension, one of the two, and we say hold it off for round two. So that would be my advice. If you don't have either of those two guys, sit tight. And wait and see what happens.
Definitely agree with that, especially because the rookie rucks extend just beyond Flynn, and a potential flare-up this week certainly was concerning to hear, but also extends toward your ruck cover, right? Like, you'd ideally like to get another week into Hunter or Meek. I think a lot of people that didn't pick a rookie R2 still started Flynn, but probably worthwhile seeing round three team sheets before committing to trading either Meek or Hunter. Both might be dropped prior to round three, right? Like, Meek was towed up a little bit by Gawn, barely had an impact after quarter time, and Hunter got towed up by first game ruckman by the end of the game. I think it was like, not that Supercoach points are everything, but obviously tell some influence, 140 to 43 points. Darcy was listed as an emergency for round one, and Paddy Ryder is missing an indefinite amount of time, but I rent opening rounds. So if that's as soon as the first two opening rounds, does Hunter get dropped if he's back in round three, for example? These are all things that I think are worthwhile waiting. You've already paid the money right up front, so unless you're going to use the cash this week, you might as well have Gawn Grundy score and field one more time and then make a call in terms of whether or not Gawn or Grundy does worse. I think both have probably a few concerns after the weekend. Grundy lost to Steph Martin, Tim English, which wasn't ideal, but we probably would have hoped for a better start than that from Grundy, regardless of coming up against tough opposition. And Gawn was obviously playing more time up forward, with Luke Jackson taking some center bounces as well. Both things that are worth another week of watching before you commit to restructuring your team. If you have both, you probably just even want to see, you know, which one do I trade out? So no real rush apart from the Dangerfield Rouse scenario. Unfortunately, we're not having perfect information at time of recording, but hopefully this has been informative enough to help you make your choices once all that is revealed. Thanks for another episode, Dunny. Great to have you on board. And rookie rucks aside, good to hear that most of your structure is holding sound. I think that's the main thing that we all want to have confidence in, is that we haven't stuffed up too many of the rookies and made too many errors that you feel like you have to trade this week. Any final thoughts to close out the round one show, Donnie?
Look, thanks for having me on again, Marcus. Look, I think for me, the advice would be just to make those necessary trades. Other than that, hold firm, trust your process that you've gone through. Hopefully you've, as I say, picked up most of the key rookies And let's wait and see where they get to before we make any big calls on them at this stage.
Thank you very much for tuning in for another round. Don't forget, patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you want some bonus material. We're going to be doing a extra recording with Bryce later tonight on the Monday evening. Good luck with the upcoming round. As Dunny has said, this is not a round for early correction trades. We're dealing with injuries / suspensions and treated at that. And hopefully, whether or not you have extra cash in bank, you should be able to find enough options in and around the price point for both Raul and for Dangerfield, especially with some DPP flexibility. So don't feel weird if you have to switch to an unoptimal structure for a week. It's not a big deal because you can, you know, switch. If you brought in a defender for Raul, you can always switch them back next week by trading a defender back out through the midfield. Make sure you make the right selection this week from a player point of view. Don't worry about your structure. That can be tweaked next week. And with that, we'll sign off for round one and catch you all again next week. See ya. Don't